Thanks for staying with us for Access Utah. We transition from technology and the latest and greatest to meditation, to fatherhood, family, and wilderness. These are some of the themes of a new collection of poetry from Michael Sauter, Associate Professor of English at Utah State University. The book is House Under the Moon. And Michael Sauter describes this new collection as a book of spiritual meditation poems interspersed with poems of wilderness, family, and fatherhood. Michael Sauter is also a meditation teacher, a local meditation group he founded, Amrita Sangha, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly or close to that, for integral spirituality. And he's done formed a meditation group at the Cache County Jail. Very interesting. We'll talk about some of these things. Michael Sauter, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
By way of transition, we're talking about the immediate, the latest and greatest gadgets in the first half of the program. You sort of go in a different direction, meditation, getting away from the physical world in a sense.
Yeah, actually, meditation is kind of a 5,000-year-old technology of inner exploration. And excuse me, in ancient India, they've found statues that of people seated in meditation in lotus posture that they think are about 5,000 years old. So it's a very ancient kind of technology. And what's very cool, though, is more and more scientists are studying meditation in the lab, doctors and medical people, and proving many of the benefits that people, yogis, have been talking about for thousands of years. You know that meditation, it's good for your body, it's good for your blood pressure, good for your heart, it's good for your mind, it increases your focus, your concentration, all that. It's good for your emotions. It's been proven that people, longtime meditators, report greater feelings of well-being and happiness and joy in their life. And then it's also a spiritual practice, too. Mm-hmm. So it works on very many levels. And you can teach it on very many levels. Like at the prison, we teach it basically as a relaxation kind of thing, help people work through stress and help people to calm down and deal with emotions better. And we don't really go into the spiritual side that much, but you can approach it in many different ways. So
I can see where this would be beneficial, for anyone, but that's a very stressful situation, being in jail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's really interesting when we go in there for a class. I go in there and sit down, and the inmates come in. And sometimes some of them will come in, and you can just see in their face anger and, hurt and stress. And then we go through the practice, and it's an hour-long class. And usually at the end of the class, we have some sharing time. And, they leave the class, and their faces are just brighter and calmer. And they say as soon as the class ends, they're looking forward to the following week when we come back. So it's very rewarding to go and feel like you're making a difference in these people's lives. Mm. So, yeah.
One more question related to the previous topic, connecting that up with the meditation. I wonder, in your sort of the stereotype is that people more and more are getting connected with their gadgets, with their it's a good thing to be interconnected with people. But on the other hand, you see people going down the street looking at their iPhone. Now we have the new technology, which we heard about in the first half of the program, where you might be able to go down the street with your eyeglasses, which are connected to.
Yeah.
And this seems to me to be the total opposite of what you're teaching, the meditation and getting centered into yourself.
Well, it's very interesting, the connections, in that people who've been meditating a very long time, what they find is that, or part of the teachings, especially in Buddhism, I've practiced in three different contemplative traditions, mystical Christianity and Buddhism and yogic Hinduism. And all three of them, people report that the part of our personality that we call our ego is very much an isolated kind of self. And it's surrounded by defenses, and it's surrounded by a kind of hardening of the heart. And that meditation and contemplative practices, they work to really soften our hearts and open us up. And so it's one of everything on the spiritual path, I feel like, is a paradox. And one of the great paradoxes is that the more we go inward and the more we practice meditation, the more our hearts soften. And the more we feel our connection with all of life, we feel in our when we're not meditating, we feel very much our interconnection with other people, with plants, with animals, with everything. And so it's one of the fun paradoxes that, you know, the more we go inward, the more we connect with people outwardly.
This would be, I guess, a higher interconnectedness.
Yeah, it's kind of a transcendence of the ego. It's a transcendence of the selfish personality, the self-centered kind of way. It's a transcendence of social conditioning into we get kind of back to a kind of primal or kind of fundamental connection with all of life. I mean, physics and science knows that we are not separate, isolated individuals, but actually our life, our breath, our eating, everything, we're connected with the environment around us, and that meditation brings us back into that kind of original relationship with the universe.
Mm. If you just joined us, we're talking on this part of the program with Michael Sauter, Associate Professor of English at Utah State University's new book of poetry, House Under the Moon, which he describes as a book of spiritual meditation poems interspersed with poems of wilderness, family, and fatherhood. In fact, it's divided into two sections, mm-hmm. right? If I pull this up, Homecoming and Housekeeping.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Tell us a little bit about this collection, House Under the Moon.
Okay. Well, this collection is a collection of poems about my 35-plus years' experience in practicing in the contemplative traditions of, like I said, three world religions, mystical Christianity, Buddhism, and yogic Hinduism. And in my 20s, I almost became a yogic monk, but finally decided that I couldn't quite do that, and I got married instead. And now I have a family, and as you said, I'm a professor and poet at Utah State. And so this book is very much about the struggle of combining or maintaining a contemplative life while living in a contemporary world of work and family. And so it's kind of a mixture. I was working on two collections. One was a collection of spiritual meditation poems, and one was a collection of family poems. And my wife, Jennifer Siner, also a writer, who always gives me the best advice, she said, well, why don't you combine those two manuscripts? And so it was a great idea. And I think that the family poems, I think, kind of ground the spiritual poems, excuse me, and the spiritual poems kind of give some sense of aspiration, I think, to the family poems.
Hmm. And that is an interesting combination. You mentioned you were thinking about becoming a monk, but decided to go to family life instead.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like in a lot of traditions, the two are sort of, it's either or. It's a choice.
Absolutely. Yeah. In traditional Buddhist traditions, there were the monks who are seeking enlightenment, and then there's everybody else who basically their role is to give alms to the monks and support the monks, and then they attain merit, and then supposedly in another lifetime they will have a higher birth and they will themselves become a monk. Mm. But there are many other, and then also there's a similar tradition in Christianity of monks and nuns going into convents and monasteries and dedicating their life to meditation and prayer, whereas the laity, you know, they're on the outside. And similarly in yogic Hinduism as well. But there are also traditions that combine the two, like the Sufi tradition. I'm a big fan of Sufi poetry. And the Sufi tradition, the Sikh tradition, several traditions really seek to combine the contemplative life with family life. And I guess I'm kind of in that camp.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And each informs the other, makes the other richer?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the place that maybe they really connect is in the place of the heart, you know, because family life is very much a life of selflessness and a life devoted to love of others. And the contemplative life is similar. It's all about opening the heart to love.
Hmm. Well, let's hear some of the poems. You've selected some from House Under the Moon.
Okay. This is the first poem that I wrote for this, excuse me, this collection. It's called Aiden Looks at the Moon. And it goes like this. After the bugling of elk, dinner by the wood stove, we turned in, slept till midnight, and then you woke crying, inconsolable. I carried you out of the cabin, across the porch where September poured over us with fragrance of sage, and you were hushed. In the moon lacquered dark, aspens quaked with owls, and I looked at you, awake in my arms, 5 months old. eyes like pearls staring at the moon, that lantern lighting this field and continent. Your first time to look at the famous orb that lit the plains of Troy, the face implored by Sappho and Sidney that Li Po leapt for, drunk and drowning, crone of Whitman, Hecate to Plath. O Ariel, O Huntress, light this boy's nights when he hikes these mountains or comes home late from cards or loving. Illuminate his honeymoon and housewarming. And when he grows past all my wanderings, soften his sleepless nights as you have mine. When I walk the house in the dark and find you in a window, reminding me again that beyond whatever carapace of longing or fear I've wrapped around myself, something calls to me from a home where the elk steps in the river.
Very good. There does seem to be a connection, not only with you, but other writers, between wilderness and spiritual, meditative.
Yeah, absolutely.
Themes.
Yeah, my first book, which was called The Empty Boat, was much more influenced by Taoism, the ancient Chinese philosophy Taoism. And Taoism is very much a kind of contemplative meditative practice that really focuses on nature and the natural world. And so that collection really explored that extensively. And the natural world, wilderness is very much a part of my spiritual practice too. I'm actually writing a book, a prose book called 12 Gates to Enlightenment. And so it's going to be, it's about 12 strategies for spiritual practice taken from different spiritual traditions. And one of the chapters focuses on aesthetics, the study of beauty. And that's very much about experiencing the natural world.
Hmm. Michael Sauter is our guest for this part of Access Utah. He's Associate Professor of English at USU and author of the new book of poetry, House Under the Moon. You're welcome to join the conversation here at 1-800-826-1495. 5 or 6 minutes left in the conversation. 1-800-826-1495. Or you can email us at upraxis@gmail.com. upraxis@gmail.com. We did have someone email us saying that, just quoting here, I would love to have him walk us through some meditation. Interested in the process.
Yeah, sure. Is that something that we could do?
Sure.
Okay. Let's walk ourselves through some meditation. So the first thing to do is to sit in a comfortable position with your back straight. It's important that when you're meditating that you're wide awake and you're alert, but your eyes are closed. And then usually the first thing to do is to just focus on the body and just pay attention to how you're feeling in this moment. And then breathe deeply and slowly. Notice how you're feeling on an emotional level without judging, without commenting. Just notice how you're feeling right now. And then let yourself just sink into your body. You can feel the weight of your body on your chair or on the floor. And then just let your mind be aware of your breathing. In most meditation practices, we focus on our breathing because the breathing is always happening right now in this moment. And if you think about it, you know, the past is gone. We have books about the past and recordings and memories, but the past itself is gone. And the future is not here yet. We can think about the future, but it's really not here. The only thing we ever have is this moment right now. And the breath is an anchor to this moment. It's always happening right now. So when we meditate, we just follow our breath as it comes in, as it goes out. And as we do this, our mind will wander. It has a tendency to run away from present experience and to get lost in thinking, remembering, planning. When you notice your mind has wandered away, just gently, without any judgment, bring your attention back to the present moment, back to the breath. And then you can also practice this during the day. If you're sweeping the floor or doing the dishes, you can just let your attention come to your breath and focus on your hands, focus on the work you're doing without getting lost in thinking. And so this is the fundamental practice. There are many other kinds of more advanced practices that one does, but this is the basic practice of being in the present moment, because it's said that the present moment is the only thing that's real, and that's where we will discover the truth. The past is gone. The future isn't here yet. It's also where we discover our creativity. It's often said that our mind is like a lake with ripples on it, and we can't really see the depths of our self until we calm the surface mind. And over time, you find that you can stay longer and longer in the present moment without your mind running off and into thinking. And the more we do that, the more we tap into tremendous wells of creativity and energy and personal power, really, in our lives that are kind of suppressed by this thinking mind that's always chattering. So that's kind of a...
Oh, thank
intro.
You. Thank you. Excellent. And the goal is
get
to the present.
Get to the present.
Get to the present. But that's very hard. It's very hard to get to the present.
It's very hard. It's interesting. It's very simple, but it's very difficult because our mind wants to run away, like I was saying, into thinking about the past or the future. And then the goals, well, there are very many different goals. The goal can be improving your physical health, your mental health, your emotional health, or your spiritual health.
Mm. So, yeah. Just have a couple minutes left. I'd like to hear another poem from House Under the Moon.
All righty. This is one that's kind of about the struggle I've had between wanting to kind of be a contemplative monk and living in the world. there's a word, sannyasi. A sannyasi is a Hindu person who has left the world and has devoted him or herself to meditation. Excuse me. It's called Fire Sermon. And, well, the poem is about the Buddha talked about, he talked very much about impermanence, that everything in the world is vanishing right before our eyes, and that we can never find lasting happiness in the vanishing things of the world, that we have to go deeper to find a kind of unconditioned joy, an inner joy that's not dependent on external circumstances. But anyway, so this is called Fire Sermon. The world is burning, said Heraclitus and Buddha, and Jesus in his way, and before them the rishis of the Vedas. Aidan and I huddle outside the tent. Orange coals, yellow flames, sapphire hold our gaze. Across the horizon, Draco flies. Hold out your hands. Feel how warm? Don't grab at the flames. The world is like this too, though I don't say that. Love with its own fire. Simone Veil found the spark in the difference between looking and eating. A sannyasi leaves home, puts on a saffron robe, becomes a walking flame.
Hmm. We have time for another poem or two. Maybe
okay.
We could read some more. In the meantime, well, let me pull this up, and let's get this email in. Appreciate this. This is from Mon Gregory. Thanks for this wonderful conversation with Dr. Sauter. What advice can he give for not letting technology make us so distracted?
well, I use technology quite a lot. I love my iPhone. And, you know, I do think technology can help us to do things lightning fast and can actually free up time if we don't spend our lives running, trying to keep up with our technology, I guess. But it's, you know, the spiritual practice is very much a discipline. It very much takes daily work. And so I get up at 4:30 in the morning. My boys always wake up at 6:30. So I get up at 4:30 and I meditate and write in my journal and do some spiritual reading. And when I can do that, it really sets my, kind of like sets the tone for the rest of my day. And then just take, you can just take little timeouts. You're working hard on your computer. You can get a little mindfulness bell. It's kind of an app, and every hour it'll just ring a tone, and you can just sit back and close your eyes for a minute or two and kind of recenter, because our minds can get so carried away, and there's so much intoxicating, seductive technology out there that you can just run away forever almost. You know, there's that funny cartoon about a kid turns to his mother and says, I reached the end of the internet, you know. And so it's like it's this endless source of immediate gratification. And so I think it's really important to turn the technology off and kind of go into ourselves. But it's a discipline. It takes work.
Mm-hmm. Especially in today's world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe one more poem.
Okay, one more poem. This one is about my other son, Kellen. And it's about reading this book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, one of the most famous books about American Zen, I guess. And there's a word Satori in it. Satori means an enlightenment experience. So it's called Kellen in My Lap, 5 months old. In a circle of lamplight, I read again Suzuki's Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. You play my fingers like piano keys, arranging and rearranging them, finding new patterns, melodies. When you woke in the 3 o'clock dark, we moved out here to a room where you could play and I could work. What is Satori? Suzuki asks. The bottom of a pail broken through. Coyote, mountain lion stalk the hills above our house. Darkness holds its wing above the valley. Orion brightens January's snow. And down in the far fields flickers a single yellow window pane. The delight you find in my fingers, a monk has no words to name. So that's kind of a poem about, whichever path you choose, a contemplative life or a family life, there are things that you gain and things that you lose. And so there's a kind of joy that you find in family that monks don't really experience. So.
And we'll end it there. We're out of time. House Under the Moon is the new collection of poetry. Michael Sauter, the poet, also English professor, associate professor at Utah State University. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks so much for
having me.
This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1 88.7 Moab, and KUSUFM HD1 91.5 Logan.